Good afternoon. I'm Mike Duff. I'm a contributing editor to Homepage News, which is the IHA-affiliated website. I'm your host for the Inspiration Theater. With us, we have the wrong paper. In this session, creating breakthrough products and experiences via brand licensing, Maya Cobray of Beanstalk will provide a ground-up perspective on brand licensing, detailing case studies, and throwing a spotlight on the benefits of licensing for brand owners and manufacturers. And Maya?
So, thank you everybody for coming this afternoon. Thank you for that introduction, Mike. So we'll be talking about all things brand licensing and consumer products today. Just before we kick off, just a little bit about myself. So as I said, my name is Maya Cobray. I have been working in the licensing industry in a number of different facets for close to 20 years now. I've worked on the brand owner side of the business as well as the licensee or manufacturer side. And now on the agency side of the business. So I've been with Beanstalk about 7.5 years now. The bulk of my time has been spent within our brand representation division, working with some of our top clients, including Stanley Black & Decker, the U.S. Army, and some others. So we'll dive in, and we'll have a question portion at the end. So a little bit more info about Beanstalk and the agency that I work for and some of our capabilities and the work that we do within the licensing industry. So for over 30 years, we've been working with some of the most iconic brands in the world, extending their brands into a variety of categories that really just help grow their business. We are a global licensing and brand extension agency. We're headquartered in New York City with offices all around the world. So I won't talk on every single one of our amazing 70-plus global clients, but just to kind of highlight a few for you here, you'll see the top line is within the packaged goods division. So we work with Procter & Gamble. We have had a longstanding relationship with them, extending their brands into close to core categories. Within the hard goods and automotive space, I mentioned I work closely on the Stanley Black & Decker business with all of their tool brands. And then from there, we have some recent exciting announcements that have come out this past week with some of our lifestyle and institution brands. So the U.S. Army is actually celebrating the 250th anniversary of the brand this year. So we've really been able to kind of utilize that to grow the licensing program even further, which is already a large program as is with over 200 licensees. The Met, or the Metropolitan Museum of Art, we actually just announced, I believe a day or two ago, a brand new partnership for educational toys with German-based manufacturer Hoppe and TED of TED Talks. We just launched a new partnership with Academic Travel for international academic experiences. From there, within the food and beverage and restaurant space, we have a number of really strong brands that we work with. So the Kellogg's brands that you'll see listed there include both their snack brands as well as the cereal brands. We work with Dole on fresh fruits and vegetable program, Haichu, Japanese candy company that's quite trendy, and then also Diageo with their suite of alcohol brands. Then within digital media or our Tinderbox division, we have a strategic relationship with Microsoft, and we work on their Xbox and Halo brands. So our practice areas, us being a full-service licensing agency, we offer kind of a range of services for potential clients and our existing clients. So the existing clients that we have that I just kind of walked you through would fall under brand representation, where we extend their brands into close to core categories. Tinderbox I spoke on with the digital media and gaming brands, and then manufacturer representation is actually a service that I also lead, where we work with manufacturers in a variety of ways that are looking for either to get into licensing or extend their licensing capabilities. And we kind of craft our projects uniquely to what that manufacturer is looking to achieve with licensing. Additional services that we offer all listed here. We have a full finance and legal back end, so we can help support on that front, as well as royalty auditing and brand partnerships and collabs. So some of the work that we do, just to kind of paint the picture for you guys and give some fun visuals to kind of tell the story of licensing. So there's licensing out, which is on, like I mentioned, on the brand licensing, brand representation side of our business. So that's working with brand owners to extend their brand out to manufacturers. So the Met, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, this is the number one museum in the world and the number one tourist attraction in New York City. The goal of this program is really to celebrate the Met's importance in global culture and create an impactful consumer products program that engages and educates audiences on the world-class collection of art and artifacts. The results have been outstanding. In the past couple of years, working alongside the Met, we've been able to sign over 40 global licensees for them across many different categories, including a beautiful line of home decor, furniture, on-trend apparel, lifestyle accessories, and collectible gifts. Our approach with this program was to really kind of start with the luxury market and then be able to expand from there. So then on the flip side, looking at licensing in, so that's the manufacturer representation, working with a manufacturer in a specific category of product that they specialize in, and finding a brand or brands that work best for them to help them achieve their goals of growth. So Epica is a company that some of you may be familiar with. This is a leading manufacturer in the cookware, bakeware, kitchen gadget space. They're actually exhibiting at the show here today. So they initially came to us looking for a highly recognizable brand that we could partner them with that would help them enhance their retail distribution and grow their business. So the first partnership that we were able to negotiate for them was with Meredith Corporation's Cooking Light brand. So this was for a full line of cookware, bakeware, kitchen gadgets. This initially launched in the off-price market. It was specifically Ross stores that were interested in a brand for this category, but we knew ultimately that they wanted to take this brand to other channels of distribution. So it needed to be a brand that we partnered them with that wouldn't just work in the off-price channel, but would also be able to go into other distribution channels as well, which it did. So they then expanded into the mass, specialty, and e-com channels. And to date, this program with Cooking Light has generated over $100 million in retail sales for the Cooking Light brand. So building off that success, we then partnered Epica with BuzzFeed's Tasty brand. So specifically, this was for all Walmart stores and Walmart.com. They were looking for to target a younger audience, so the Gen Z millennial consumers. This was for, again, a full line of products, cookware, bakeware, kitchen gadgets. And since the launch of this program in 2017, it's generated over $500 million. In retail sales. So definitely a very big success. So following that, BuzzFeed was obviously very happy with Epica's performance. So they also granted them rights for the Goodfull brand. And so that line was really targeted for the department store channel and also kind of focusing on maybe a more mature customer with a focus on healthy eating. Which is kind of integral to the Goodfull brand. So it initially launched at Macy's and has expanded since then, and it's now available at other retailers as well as Amazon. To date, this program has generated over $50 million in retail sales. So a little bit of a licensing 101 here, just to kind of break down what is the license model versus sourced. Sourced, there's other ways of saying it. Maybe it's OEM, contract manufacturing, but for purposes of kind of breaking down the two different models here, we're going to call it sourced. So on the sourced model, you have the brand owner. They're purchasing product from a third-party manufacturer. They're handling the cost of the product and the packaging. And then from there, the brand owner is also managing the full life cycle of it. So they're managing the inventory, they're selling the product into retail, they're handling the customer service and the marketing of it. Versus a licensed model, so you have that same brand owner, but in this case, they are granting rights to their brand for a specific category to a third-party manufacturer, or the licensee in this case, who then the brand owner still has oversight of approving the product and the design of it, making sure that it holds up the integrity of their brand. And then the onus is on the manufacturer or licensee to handle the inventory of the licensed product, the sales, the customer service, and the marketing of it. So just diving a little bit further on what is licensing. So really, at the crux of it, it's a brand owner or licensor granting a third party, in this case the licensee or manufacturer, permission to develop and sell a product using their logo, their attributes, and their intellectual property in exchange for a fee or a royalty, which is a percentage of those license sales. So a nice example to show you here is our client, Procter & Gamble, with the Mr. Clean brand. We partnered them with Bradshaw Home, another company that many of you may be familiar with here at the show. So they are a leading manufacturer within the cleaning product space, and the end result was a new line of Mr. Clean branded products, including brooms and mops and cleaning accessories. So this agreement actually dates back to 2000, which marked the first time there was a licensing agreement in the cleaning category. This deal enabled Bradshaw to be able to differentiate against their competitors in the marketplace, and it also allowed Mr. Clean to engage with their customers in new ways and also drive sales back to their core business by utilizing end caps and cross-promotional opportunities. So I've highlighted a number of the benefits of licensing on all sides of the business, but just to kind of recap for you here and talk through a little bit. So the benefits for the licensor, again, that's the brand owner. So it's really for them to be able to kind of focus on their core business and spend their time there, but still maintain a presence in adjacent categories or businesses that still have strategic value for them. Being able to license the brand allows them to build their brand awareness and reinforce those brand values across different categories, strengthen the relationship with their customer base, increase consumer touch points, reach new customers and educate them about the brand, extend into new distribution channels via their licensed partners who may have existing relationships with other distribution channels that the brand isn't currently playing in. Importantly, generate different revenue streams with minimal upfront investment, be able to protect the broad trademark of the brand from trademark registration standpoint, partnering with best-in-class manufacturers who the category that you're granting the license to them to, this is their bread and butter, this is their wheelhouse. So partnering with somebody who's an expert in that category to make the product under your brand really values the license. And then lastly, the ability to test new categories. If a brand isn't sure if they want to get into a category, then themselves and set up new infrastructure to support that, they can test via licensing with minimal or no upfront cost. So to continue on with the benefits on the flip side for the manufacturer or licensee, of which there are also many benefits. So leveraging the brand awareness of an existing, trusted, established brand is really key for licensees. So here you can see some examples of different small domestic appliances that are all licensed with Spectrum Appliances under the Black & Decker brand. Black & Decker is a longstanding established brand within the home space. It's a trusted brand. And so Spectrum has really been able to capitalize on that brand awareness and grow a very significant small domestic appliances business. Another benefit is gaining that competitive advantage, like I talked about with the Mr. Clean and Bradshaw products. So if someone's walking the aisle and you're looking at non-branded kitty litter, you might be more inclined to buy kitty litter that has the Febreze Freshness Odor Shield, a brand that we all know, trust, and love. If that's integrated into the product, you might be more inclined to purchase that. So that's giving that manufacturer a fresh step, a competitive advantage. Another benefit is capturing a broader consumer base by leveraging the brand loyals end users. So if you have somebody who's a huge fan of the Bailey's brand, they're going to be more inclined to purchase additional products that are made available to them in the marketplace, utilizing that delicious flavor profile of their favorite liqueur. Another benefit would be increasing market share. So a lot of manufacturers that we work with, while they may have an existing presence at retail, they might be just kind of having a small percentage of the market with their existing non-branded product. But by licensing a brand, that allows them to really capture a more significant amount of the market share of the category that they're in. Another benefit that I mentioned earlier is also that ability to partner with a brand's core team to capitalize on cross-promotional opportunities. So the DeWalt brand is part of the Stanley Black & Decker portfolio, a very established brand within the construction power tools space, and they do a lot of marketing and promotional activity. So we have an opportunity here for our licensees of the program to be able to kind of capitalize and get in on that action. Another benefit would be entering new channels of distribution. So our client Kellogg's and the Eggo brand, I think we all know and love the Eggo brand and are familiar seeing it in the frozen foods aisle, but maybe you haven't seen it at your local liquor store because they've been able to enter a whole new market and a whole new channel of distribution by licensing the Eggo brand for a new eggnog flavored liqueur that's been able to open up new distribution for the brand. Another one, so back to all showcasing the Met again here. So differentiating the pricing strategy is also a key benefit for licensees. So they may have an existing product line that they're selling that's not branded. Maybe it's opening price point, and that's working for them, but they want to be able to capture additional market share. So they can license a brand, and maybe it's something like the Met, where it's a little more of a luxury, high-end market, and so they're appealing to that marketplace with a higher price point on the licensed products, but they still have their existing opening price point line of products, so they're not cannibalizing one another and they can both succeed in the market. And then lastly, another benefit would be expanding retailer relationships. So whether that's extended shelf space or being able to enter new aisles within the store, those are all really key benefits for the licensee. So with that, I thank you all, and hopefully you've been able to learn something about brand licensing and consumer products. And I will open it up if anyone has questions.
Can we talk about celebrity brand licensing and how that works?
Yes. So can you talk about celebrity brand licensing and any differentiators on that? Yes. So celebrity licensing is definitely abundant in the marketplace. It's something that we've definitely done on behalf of a number of our clients. It's not really a pillar of our business, as you can all probably imagine. One of the key issues with celebrity licensing is that there's a big variable in place, in that you're working not just with a brand that's been around for 100 years, you're basing it all around a person, a celebrity, a personality, where there could easily be a PR crisis that occurs, and retailers don't really like taking those kinds of risks. So I guess it kind of also depends on the retailer and what the category is. But I know we at our agency tend to focus on more corporate brands, but celebrity licensing is massive. And a lot of the agencies like CAA, IMG, that represent a lot of celebrities tend to kind of obviously focus on licensing opportunities. But that's huge, especially in like the health and beauty space. I feel like you can't walk past a perfume section without seeing like every celebrity with a perfume brand and whatnot. So definitely a big sector of licensing.
So the opposite, do you work with any patented products that aren't in the market with finding, because you showed two really big, large companies working together in most of those. So in most instances, is it already a very set brand with a brand, not a new product design?
Not necessarily. So always, I think, when licensing a brand, that brand needs to have a certain foundation and a certain level of being established in the marketplace, because you're not really going to generate a ton of sales and interest from customers if it's not a brand that they know and trust and love. So do you mean like on the manufacturer side?
As an invention or as a patented product that's not on the market.
So are you
that a brand that is established can take that on and generate sales with it?
So that's looking to license the technology, the IP. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a part of licensing as well. And there's a number of companies, many of the clients that I mentioned here, that work with inventors that maybe have product in the marketplace. It's really all about kind of their process of being able to evaluate the patent, whether it's a utility patent, a design patent, whatever it is, and just kind of figuring out maybe they just purchase the patent outright. If it's a larger company like a Procter & Gamble, a Stanley Black & Decker, I imagine they would just want to purchase the patent outright. But maybe a smaller brand may be willing to enter into a more kind of standard licensing agreement where there's a royalty percentage that you, as the holder of the patent, are able to receive for each unit that they sell utilizing your patent. Does that answer?
Right, but does your company work with that? No.
No, we don't really focus on IP licensing. We really focus on more kind of the areas that I mentioned of representing the brands and then working with actual manufacturers who are distributing product into the marketplace and helping match them up with brands.
Great.
Any other questions? Oh, we do have more questions.
Can you speak to pricing, fees, minimum production runs, anything like that? Just looking at your website, looks like you do audits. Is it based off of revenue? Again, just educate us a little bit on that.
So all things pricing, so meaning like the structure of a licensing agreement and the financials? Okay. So it's going to slightly depend on the brand. Some brands, like U.S. Army, typically have maybe more reasonable royalty rates, and the minimum guarantees are just kind of a set number that aren't astronomical, thus has enabled us to grow that program to be over 200 licensees. Some others, it's a little bit more of an in-depth process, like a Procter & Gamble, a Stanley Black & Decker, where there's no set fee per se. It's really going to be dependent because there's so many factors that go into it. So it's really going to be dependent on the category of product, first and foremost, because some categories like apparel, there's a little more wiggle room there. There's a good, healthy amount of margin. But then some categories like a pressure washer or a generator on the Stanley Black & Decker front, a lot less margin, much higher cost product, and a lot more that we would need to evaluate there. So understandably, maybe the royalty rates would be lower for a category like those as opposed to apparel or accessories. So the royalty rate, like I said, that's the percentage of the license sales, and that's the fee that's paid back to the brand owner. That it can range anywhere from 1% to 20%, maybe even higher if you're Disney. So it really kind of ranges depending on the category, and that's part of the negotiation between the manufacturer and the brand owner. So once you've aligned on a royalty rate, typically the brand owner will want the manufacturer or licensee to provide sales projections. So they want to understand kind of what's the size of prize for this program. Do you think typically deals are structured across the board? An initial deal would be 3 years. So that gives enough time for the manufacturer to be able to get products approved by the brand owner, get product made, and get it into the marketplace and see at least 1 year, hopefully much more than that, of actual sales in the marketplace. So it's kind of managing the expectations of the brand owner to provide sales projections. It's not an exact science, but as the category expert. That manufacturer hopefully understands what they may or may not be able to achieve by signing a brand. So they'll provide those projections. And then from there, it's usually kind of simple math. Multiplying the royalty rate against the sales projections gives you the expected royalties that the brand owner will receive. And every brand owner differs when it comes to minimum guarantees. Some brands may not require a minimum guarantee, which is a contractual amount due to the brand owner every year. The idea of a minimum guarantee is not to keep a licensee up at night or some unachievable number. Really, it's there as an additional layer of accountability when it comes to the licensing agreement. So that should never be some crazy unattainable number. It's really just, like I said, it's to make sure, it's to help protect the brand owner so that they're not licensing away a category to somebody who's just going to sit on the rights and they're not going to do anything with it. So hopefully that's not the case. But unfortunately, we've seen that in the past. So those minimum guarantees are calculated in a variety of ways. I'd say standard is looking at the projected royalties, and maybe 50 to 60% of that would be the contractual minimum guarantee that's owed every year. Does that answer your question? Okay.
I imagine there are brand owners who are really interested in all the benefits of licensing and what it has to offer, but might be a little bit nervous about licensing out their brand to a third party. So how do you mitigate those risks? What processes do you have in place for that?
So one of our services is consulting. So we may be talking to a brand owner who might be a little trepidatious about going into full steam licensing. So we offer them the ability to do a consulting project where we kind of show them, here's what it could look like if you were to start to license your brand. Or maybe they've already done a little bit of licensing, but they're not really sure where to go from there. So we kind of do some work to kind of show them the white spaces and say, these are some categories that we think make a lot of sense that you could get into. And here's the potential revenue that you could see from going into those categories. We also have different kind of sister agencies that we work with that can help conduct market research and extendability surveys, that whether it's just a simple kind of survey that we can put out on Facebook or social media to see kind of what the customer base wants in that brand, to leave it maybe more open-ended and see what categories do they want to see for that brand, or we can list out some categories and say, would you want to purchase this if this brand went into XYZ categories?
As a follow-up question, what does your agency do in terms of vetting licensees and conducting due diligence to make sure that they are sound partners for your clients?
So there's a lot of due diligence that goes into place. We don't just hand out licenses. We do a lot of upfront work, kind of doing the research, having initial conversations with a manufacturer to really get in there, understand their capabilities, understand their business, what their current distribution model looks like, what does their infrastructure of the company look like, could they really support a license that they bring in. And then we also have our finance team that does some due diligence as well. We conduct D&B reports to check the credit history of a company. And no matter how that comes back, it really just prompts a conversation with the partner. So by the time we're signing a licensing agreement, we are well into it and we know each other quite intimately. And so that it mitigates risk once we've done all of that due diligence.
Cool. We have another question over here.
Hi, thank you. My name is Michelle, and I work for a company, and we license... I think we have 6 licensed brands now, on top of about 20 proprietary brands of our own. We have a very unique industry where we sell to casinos. We provide their gifts for their loyalty programs. And so obviously we have a lot of brands to chase. I'm constantly watching Google alerts and things like that. Trying to have quarterly meetings with our licensors to understand what's going on with the brand. But is there a certain cadence or way that I should be gleaning information about the brand to kind of stay on top of everything that that brand is doing so we can also help push it to our clients to learn more about the brand?
So you're asking about staying on top of existing brands that you have partners with or like trending brands in the marketplace that you may not already have relationships with?
Both, but more so the ones that we're currently in partnership with.
So, I mean, Google Alerts is certainly one, but I would hope that with the existing license partners that you have, the brand owners that you're working with, there's some sort of established cadence of communication. I think that's key in a healthy brand owner. They shouldn't necessarily just hand out the rights to their brand and say, hey, we'll see you every quarter when we come asking for money. That really doesn't help a healthy partnership get established and grow. I think at a minimum, maybe there should be like a biannual touch base where you're both sharing information. So you're providing to the brand owner what's happening with their brand within your casino distribution promotional opportunities, like the feedback that you're getting. If you're having headwinds, tailwinds, whatever you're experiencing, the brand owner should be really eager to be hearing from you as someone who's on the ground distributing their brand. They're going to want to know that. And then vice versa, they should be sharing with you, their licensed partner, the latest and greatest of what's happening with their brand, or on the off chance that maybe they're having a negative turn with the brand, whatever it is that's happening, they should be giving you those updates. But really, it's just continued marketing updates, activity with the brand, if they've signed additional licensing partners, if they've engaged in other categories. I mean, it's a full range, but if you don't already have a regular cadence set up of communication with the brand owners, I definitely recommend that you do that. In addition, I mean, you said you have the Google Alerts, but there's a lot of trades within the licensing industry that are incredibly informative. So License Global is one of them, and there's a number of others that I can give you. I can provide a list afterwards, but subscribing to those, that'll just give you kind of top line daily updates on what's happening within the licensing industry. And then attending relevant trade shows. So a really good example of one would be the Licensing Expo, which happens every year in Las Vegas. And that's, I believe, end of May this year. So that's where you have a whole section of agencies, so you can come visit and say hi. But primarily, it's really a bunch of brand owners exhibiting in the space and showcasing the latest and greatest of what they are doing with their brands. So that's also a great way to kind of have a firsthand experience of seeing what brands are exhibiting and what are they doing, what's hot.
Hi. Is there any unique approach for licensing a nonprofit, to the different sectors? Any pitfalls or things that you might look at or suggest?
So, nonprofit space, I know we've definitely done some work from a client perspective. I think we've partnered with American Cancer Society in the past. We actually have a new client of ours, which is Feed, which is Laura Bush leads that company. So we've definitely done a little dabbling of working with nonprofits. So I think it comes down to kind of the messaging of the brand and what are going to be, it's looking at the strategy of how does that brand, I'm calling the nonprofit a brand here, how does that resonate for people and what is going to be a meaningful partnership? So really being very strategic about the categories that you extend them into. And sometimes it's maybe looking at like maybe not the most traditional license of just putting the logo on the product, but maybe it's a certification. For example, like with American Cancer Society, I know we were looking at like the sunscreen category made a lot of sense, but you don't necessarily need American Cancer Society branded sunscreen, but maybe it's a sunscreen brand like a Coppertone or somebody that everyone knows and trusts and has brand loyalty, but then it's a certification of this has been signed off on by American Cancer Society, and then a portion of the royalties or the full amount of royalties would then go into funnel into funding the nonprofit.
Hello, I'm a manufacturer. I have been approached to do a license for a celebrity-driven brand, and the first thing they want is sales productions, and it's kind of out of the blue. So I just wondered if you have a guideline to that, and also if we can, how much support we can expect with them getting into their current retailers, like they already are sold for other product lines in certain stores. Is there any hope of them helping us in that way, or is that?
That's definitely something that you should be focusing on in the negotiation, and perhaps from a contractual standpoint, having certain things kind of listed in there that as the brand owner or the celebrity, certain things that you are, that they're going to be contractually required to do. So whether it's an appearance at a retailer when you launch the product, is it a photo shoot with the product line? So they're going to want to know upfront kind of what's the commitment from the celebrity that you're going to want from them. Ask for the world and let them say no to things and whittle the list down, but definitely ask for the full gamut. And in terms of providing sales projections, of course, they're asking for that because just like with any brand owner, they want to understand what's the potential here. So you have to, it's like I said before, it's not an exact science. They know that, but you need to manage expectations. You don't want them making assumptions that you're going to do $100 million out the gate. Maybe you are, and congratulations. But you want to set their expectations realistically, depending on what your category of product is. Show them the information at hand. Tell them this category, whatever you're in, is a $10 million market. And with this celebrity brand attached to it, I think that I can achieve 5% market share with this. So what does that equate to? And then telling them, I'm not going to be able to do this right out the gate. There's going to be a window of launching this product, doing the marketing with your support, of course, and getting it out into marketplace. But I think by year three, I could be able to do X. And you really want to strike the balance of certainly being modest with it. You don't want to over-promise, under-deliver. I would go the other way and try to under-promise and over-deliver. So you still want it to also be numbers that are enticing for them, which is something that is a little challenging also when it comes to celebrity licensing, because now some of these endorsement deals and licensing deals that celebrities have, the numbers have really grown over the last couple of years, and it's pretty astronomical. So it's going to be challenging, I would say, to get a celebrity brand that is willing to do something for less than like $1 million a year.
Thank you. Ben.
Any other questions? Oh, see you back.
This is fun. Let's keep going.
Hi. So you showed an example up there. It was Fresh Pet and Febreze, and it was interesting because it's co-branded licensing. Can you talk a little bit more about the intricacies of partnerships like that and how you approach that type of a conversation versus a standard licensing like what you showed with Mr. Clean or Black & Decker?
Yep. So great question. So collaborations is something that I'm sure everyone is familiar with and has seen really popping up in popularity in the marketplace over the last many years. So Fresh Step and Febreze is a perfect example of that. We've actually dedicated resources within our agency to focusing specifically on that sector of licensing. So it's still somewhat standard within licensing, except you're basically splitting the royalty rate. So whoever the manufacturer is, typically I'd say it's a 50-50 split for the two brands that are involved. But again, each negotiation kind of solicits a different end experience. So Yeah, it's all kind of in the negotiation of it. Sometimes I see more with collaborations, maybe they're limited time offerings or LTOs. So it's kind of driving the experience of that collab by making it kind of only available for a short term, and it just makes it a little more enticing for the end customer to take advantage of going out and purchasing that collaborated product, as opposed to knowing that it may not be there for quite some time. Perfect example of that would be like Supreme. They are known for doing a number of LTOs, and some of the collabs that they've done have definitely followed suit with that, and they've seen a lot of success.
Is there any more questions? Well, if not, may I thank you?
Thank you all.
Very much appreciated.